welcome to Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of orders today. Apologize in advance for our audio problems. I'll hope for the best, let's see we can get through this program unscathed. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day, which is Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. Happy National Winter Solstice Day, yes? First day of winter and the shortest day of the year. Also happens to be National Homeless Persons Day, so give a warm meal to a street person today, please. And did you know on this day in 1898, scientists Pierre and Marie Curie discovered the element radium? A whole 70 years later, in 1968, the Apollo 8 crew blasted off for another NASA first manned mission to the moon. Last but not least, in 1991, the former Soviet Union formally dissolved as 11 of 12 republics signed the treaty breaking up the USSR, ushering in a new Russian era. Well, with that, let's get started with the precious metals report. Well, gold did hit 1800 today, although it's closed down, looks like about $3 at 1789. It's silver up as high as 2284, closing at 2256. Platinum up $1 to 946, and palladium up 43, 2.5%, closing at 1883. Now, as good a the day that was for palladium, oil, geez, through the roof. Domestic oil up almost, well, over 4%, up $2.85 a barrel to close at 71.46. International Brent up $2.69 to 74. 21. Big day there in the oil market. The U.S. dollar index actually surprisingly down, 96.48, down just, what's that, 0.07%. That can only mean, well, it doesn't mean what think it would mean. Most yields up again today. The 10-year bellwether treasury up 0.053 to close at 1.472. That 5-year up slightly to 1.224. The long-term 30-year note also up to 1.872. Now, what's going on here in the stock markets? Just about all major markets across the world up today. Nikkei up almost 600 points. Chinese index up a percent. European also up over a percent here in the States. The Dow Jones up all day, closing at 560, roughly, 35,492 and change. We got the broader S&P 500 index up 81 points, close about 4,649. And the tech-heavy NASDAQ up 360 points, big day. Closing at 15,341. We'll talk a little bit more about all of this here in a minute. And, boy, what it's worth, that is today's DGS Market Report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Once again, my apologies for the audio issues on my computer today. Hopefully you can hear me and I'm not breaking out. Let's continue with talk about these markets. Again, the major averages rebounded today after three straight days of losses. It fears about this fast-spreading Omicron variant, COVID-19. Dow Jones again up 600 points, roughly. Busted out right away this morning, 350 points, helped by gains by Nike and Boeing. Even the small cap benchmark Russell 2000, it's up 2%. Now you got these reopening plays like airlines, cruise lines, entertainment stocks, also some relief buying. Delta Air up 2.5%, United Air 3, Carnival up 4, Las Vegas Sands up more than 3, Caesars Entertainment added 5%. Nike shares jumped 6. After the sneaker maker reported quarterly earnings that exceeded analysts' expectations, just looking for any excuse to turn it around. But this was despite ongoing supply chain pressures. Other retailers like Gap, Dick's, and Macy's also gained. So again, stocks are coming back from a three-day losing streak spurred by the Omicron surge that accounted for 73% of new infections in the U.S. last week. Yesterday, the S&P notched its worst three-day stretch since September. Timothy Lesko at Brown Investment Advisors said that the market seemed to be reacting to a short-term oversold position, Omicron creating significant volatility, bonds overbought, stocks oversold, and now the analysts are all seeking to find answers. Oil bounced back again, spurring a rebound in names like Devon Energy, ConocoPhillips, and Chevron. And, of course, you get, again, the 10-year yield rebounded after concerns dragged it down as low as 1.36 late last week. Now, this Omicron surge has kept investors on edge. The variant now found in at least 43 states here, in 90 countries overall. Officials at the WHO said Omicron is more contagious than any previous variant of COVID, including Delta. As Melody reported yesterday, the blue chip Dow dropped more than 400 points for its third straight declining session yesterday, with the S&P and NASDAQ both declining more than 1%. Dow lost nearly 1,000 points in sessions. Mark Hackett, who's at Nationwide, said that as we head into this shortened holiday week, increased volatility and thinner trading volumes could cause, trading volumes, that is, could cause the market to overreact, which could be a buying opportunity to run up to Christmas. Investors are also assessing the prospects for President Joe Biden's economic agenda. Senate apparently will vote on his sweeping social safety net and climate policy bill in January, that despite Joe Manchin's current opposition. With this volatility, the gold and silver market has been unable to find any upside traction. That is, some economists are downgrading their 2022 economic forecast after the Build Back Better legislation was dealt what appears to be a big blow by West Virginia Senator Manchin, if not a temporary death blow. Too big to fail banking giant Goldman Sachs is leading the way. It downgraded its economic projections for next year after Manchin said he couldn't support the legislation in an interview with Fox News on Sunday. Goldman's chief economist, Jan Hatzius, says that the investment firm now, in fact, expects the economy to grow 2% in the first quarter. That's down from its initial forecast of 3%. for the rest of the year, Goldman sees GDP expanding 3% in the second quarter, down from the previous 3.5, and then 2.75%, down from 3 in the third. Of course, economic and market analysts are noting that heading into the new year, the economy could face additional challenges, particularly as it loses support both the Fed and Congress with their various stimulus. Last week, of course, Fed announced that it would lower its monthly bond purchases sooner than initially planned. Fed expects it will end its monthly bond purchases by as early now as March, July. Fed also said it sees potential for at least 3 rate hikes this coming year. Markets have pushed up the timing of the first rate hike. Along with political turmoil in the U.S., global economy faces growing uncertainty as European nations look to impose new restrictions to slow this new Omicron variant. Market analysts Craig Earlham warned the Santa rally may elude us this year after an impressive pre-Christmas rebound following the initial Omicron shock. Well, a couple trading days left this week, plus next, to see what rings true. Given the amount of downside risk going on into the new year, it's hardly surprising to see investors adopting a more cautious approach as they log off for the holidays. Despite this risk-off sentiment, gold prices continue to struggle to attract bullish attention here at the end of the year. Gold just hasn't attracted any follow-through buying after Friday's push above 1,800, though it did get briefly there, as I mentioned, early this morning. Many analysts now see that upward move as a short recovery. Now, with the tightening Fed, rising Treasury yields are supporting positive divergence in the dollar against other major central bank currencies. However, some analysts do believe if there's a significant erosion in the risk sentiment and a further sell-off across the risk assets, we could see gold come back to life earlier than we think. Now, in his 44 years running the multinational software technology company Oracle, founder Larry Ellison has never spent this kind of money, not even close. Oracle's announcement yesterday that it's buying medical software vendor Cerner for $28 billion is monumental for a company that was once viewed as the software industry's great consolidator. On 15 occasions since 2005, Oracle shelled out at least one bill for an acquisition. 7 of those topped $5 billion. In 2009, Oracle paid $7.4 billion for Sun Microsystems, opening its wallet for servers and storage networks to go beyond software and become what Ellison called an integrated system. Only once before this week has Ellison ever spearheaded a deal of $10 billion or more. That came in 2004 when Oracle bought PeopleSoft for $10.3 billion in a hostile battle that lasted a year and a half. And agreeing to buy Cerner for almost 3 times the price of PeopleSoft, Oracle is certainly jumping into the modern era of M&A that in recent years seemed to pass Ellison by. Rivals have used their expanding market cap and swelling cash piles to buy growth or to get into a market that can keep them relevant as the world goes cloud mobile, driven more and more and more by data. It's the first mega deal for Oracle since the $9.3 billion purchase of cloud business management software vendor NetSuite. 2016. Now, Ellison, who's Oracle's chair, was NetSuite's biggest shareholder, with ownership about 40% of the company at the time of the deal. Should this particular deal be consummated, it could be to Oracle's days of aggressive acquisition activity, during which time the company very effectively rolled up the legacy client server application space. What's different this time around, however, is that the sector's in the midst of a strong secular growth driven by an architectural shift that won't allow. This year alone, Salesforce, like any else, closed at $27 billion. Its purchase of Slack, and of course Square announced plans to buy Australian fintech company Afterpay, $29 billion. Microsoft said it's buying speech recognition software provider Nuance Communications for $16 billion, and Zoom agreed to buy contact center software company Five9. Just about $15 billion in stock. Although, I add, that deal was rejected by Five9 shareholders after a slide in Zoom stock price made the combination of those companies unattractive. Oracle's purchase of Cerner, assuming it gets approved by regulators and Cerner stockholders, will be up there with the largest of them ever. The biggest came in 2019 when IBM closed its $34 billion acquisition of Red Hat. Wow. Things change, the more they same, don't they, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, we've got the haves and the have-nots. The bigs, the bigger, and the biggest. Seems just becoming a world, a business world of less and less. Now, I don't know if you saw this. Megastore drug chain Rite Aid said earlier today that it plans to shutter at least 63 stores as it reassesses how many locations it needs in the U.S. Somebody said its closures were identified as part of an ongoing review and that it thinks it will find additional places to close the next several months. Of course, the goal, reduce costs, boost profitability, and have a healthy foundation. Heck with all those employees who are working there, although read between the lines, and they're going to do their best to find other stores for these people. Practically speaking, you know how that works out. Although Rite Aid earned more than expected, recently, its sales for the 3 months ending in November came in lower than analysts expected. Their outlook for sales in the coming fiscal year. I hear that music. It means you get a break from this audio dysfunction.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen here on the wireless cell for the rest of the program. I hope this is better. It's not optimal, but it's the best we can do today. We're also on the web at DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. Now, time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's topic is, well, we'll call it excess. The big three auction houses hit a record $15 billion in sales this year as a surge in global wealth and a wave of young first-time collectors drove sales of, let's say everything. Christie's yesterday reported sales of $7.1 billion for the year. It's the highest total in 5 years. Sotheby's earlier reported sales of $7.3 billion, its best showing in the company's 277-year history. And Phillips said its sale rose to $1.2 billion, also a company record. CEO of Christie's, Guillaume Cerruti, says that every single category is outperforming. Well, yay for them, right? The auction records highlight the surge in global wealth during the pandemic, especially as government stimulus, central bank easing, soaring asset prices, and a rebound in consumer demand created a massive wave of liquidity for especially wealthy buyers. The boom in crypto and online stock trading also spawned a new generation of young wealthy collectors who started buying everything from art and classic cars to luxury goods, wine, watches, and diamonds online. Jeez. The most expensive work auctioned this year, Pablo Picasso's giant Femme Assise Pre-Dune Fenêtre, which fetched $103.4 million at Christie's. Not bad to hang on your wall. Second highest, Jean-Michel Basquiat's In This Case went for $93 million. Driving all the growth, a new generation of collectors who have never before been clients of the big auction houses. Sotheby's said 44% of its bidders this year were new to the auction house, while half the buyers at Phillips were first-timers. At Christie's, over a third, 35% of all buyers were new, with two-thirds entering through online sales. And a third of those folks were millennials. This rise of non-fungible tokens also added to sales. Christie's launched its NFT auction boom in March with a $69 million sale of Beeple's Everydays. It racked up total NFT sales of $150 million, which is bizarre, these non-fungible tokens. So Sotheby's reported NFT sales of $100 million. It launched Metaverse this year. It's a new marketplace for NFTs altogether. The luxury category, which includes watches, jewelry, wine, handbags, and other fashion items, had some of the biggest surprises with prices and demand. If Phillips watches saw an unprecedented white glove year, meaning 100% of the lots offered at auction sold for over $209 million. It's obscene. Christie's results were helped by the $8 million sale of Marie Antoinette's bracelets, as well as the $500,000 sale of a Hermes Himalaya Diamond Kelly bag, plus a 15-carat purple pink diamond that fetched $29 million. The big auction houses also profited from the continued strength in so-called private sales, where assets are sold directly to buyers without an auction. Wealthy buyers came from all around the world, especially Asia. Asian by has accounted for nearly a third of Christie's sales and almost half at Sotheby's. It is a crazy, crazy world out there, ladies and gentlemen, and that is this week's Levity is Golden. Let's return with some feet on the ground. How about it? A strike at Kellogg that's gone on since early October has ended after workers voted to ratify a new labor contract at the company's four U.S. cereal plants. This new contract covers 1,400 workers represented by the union at plants in Michigan, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. Kellogg said the new contract provides immediate across-the-board wage increases and enhanced benefits for all those who are covered. It also provides an accelerated defined path to top-tier wages, which have been a major sticking point for workers, plus benefits for transitional employees. Workers who've been on strike since the 5th of October will apparently return to work on Monday. Not sure if that's this Monday, coming Monday the 27th, or the Monday after the new year. But whatever the case, the Bakery Confectionery Tobacco Workers and Grain Millers International said the contract's a win for its workers. Union President Anthony Shelton was quoted as saying this agreement makes gains and doesn't include any concessions. Now, members of the union voted on the proposed contract over this past weekend. The offer includes the cost of the living adjustments plus a $1.10 per hour raise for all employees, seemingly modest. Earlier this month, an overwhelming majority of workers voted down a five-year offer that would have provided 3% raises and cost of living adjustments in coming years to most, but not all, of the workers, and that had been a sticking point. Workers have been on strike in Battle Creek, Michigan, Omaha, Nebraska, a neighbor here, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and Memphis, Tennessee. They make all the company's well-known brands of cereal, including Apple Jacks and Frosted Flakes, which are great. Kellogg's said most of its workers at its cereal plants earned an average of $120,000 last year, though union members have said they work more than 80 hours a week to earn that amount. And those, the highest of wages, are only available to longtime workers with more than 20 years service. Under the two-tiered pay system the company uses, newer workers are paid less and receive fewer benefits. That was another thing that had been a sticking point, though Kellogg's didn't offer change on that part of the contract. The company has said it will allow all workers with at least 4 years' experience to move up to the higher pay level as part of the new contract. Now, union officials previously said the plan wouldn't let others move up quickly enough. But the company proposed eliminating the current 30% cap on the number of workers at each plant who receive the lower wages. Whew, well, that's good news for everybody, presumably. We'll see how it affects consumers in the coming months as some of these new costs begin to kick in across the country. Now, here's a story that is interesting, a little aggravating, but I hesitate to say making a mountain out of a molehill as big as the Pentagon is, but the DOD is overhauling how it keeps track of its guns and ammunition. And Congress is apparently going to require more accountability from the Pentagon. And all responses to an investigation by the Associated Press, mainly, and it showed lost or stolen military weapons were reaching America's streets. Now, this missing weaponry includes assault rifles, machine guns, handguns, armored piercing grenades, even artillery shells, mortars, grenade launchers, and more. No specifics on what countries, is it just the U.S.? Talking about grenade launchers and artillery shells. now going to have to give congressmen and senators an annual report on these weapon losses. And under the newly passed National Defense Authorization Act, which the president's expected to sign any day. As the AP's investigation showed, military officials weren't advising Congress, even as guns and explosives continued to disappear. To meet the new reporting requirements, however, the military will modernize how it accounts for its millions of firearms and mountains of explosives. If there are hundreds of missing weapons in any new report, members of Congress, they say, are going to see it, and they're going to be asked about it publicly and held accountable for it, the Pentagon, that is. Pentagon officials, however, have said that they can account for more than 99.9% of firearms and continue to take weapons security very seriously. Therein lies my remark about whether it's making a mountain out of a molehill, which I don't believe it is. Just by sheer numbers, even a tenth of a percent means literally thousands, if not more, of these missing weapons. Now, the Army, which is the largest branch with the most weapons, took on a major overhaul of how its units report missing, lost, or stolen weapons. Here we are, 2021. Paper records finally are giving way to a digital form. And a central logistics operations center is collecting and verifying serious incident reports that didn't always go all the way up the chain of command as they did in the other branches. This new system uses an existing software system called Vantage, to give commanders a real-time look at what's unaccounted for. Other changes will affect how the military responds to law enforcement investigations. For example, when a gun is recovered or sought during a criminal case, the Pentagon's Small Arms and Light Weapons Registry is supposed to determine the last known location or unit responsible for it. But again, the registry's information, just so large, was inaccurate, and the responses to law enforcement weren't timely. That's according to internal Army documents. The Army is now developing an app that would search each service's property record databases. The note will also require the Defense Secretary to report confirmed thefts to the National Crime Information Center, which the FBI runs. Interesting news there on that front. Now, this past fall, surging energy prices were, of course, one of the most visible and, well, alarming side effects of the world's massive effort to reopen economies around the world, seemingly all at once. Here we are, just a few months later, a warmer start to the winter than probably expected, and worries that this Omicron variant will cause a slowdown. Together, they've cut the price of one of America's main fuel sources nearly in half from its peak just a few months ago. You know, as we know, natural gas is a major source of heating and electricity for American homes. Heading into the winter, these lower prices shouldn't cause the pocketbook shock that analysts had recently feared, especially as growing inventories have changed the pricing landscape. Compare that to Europe, which doesn't produce its own gas, and still it faces steep shortages. Rising prices in the U.S. often stem from the size of natural gas inventories held in storage, in reserve. In September, when prices were climbing toward their peak, storage levels had shrunk to below 7.5%, below the five-year average. That was thanks to a combination of the rapid demand increase from the reopening, plus the cooling needs from a hotter-than-normal summer, and, of course, the disruption from Hurricane Ida. But storage levels have recovered in large part because of the unseasonably warm start to winter. over the past few weeks are hovering right around the five-year average, that according to the Energy Information Admin. The EIA's next weekly report will probably show a surplus to the average for the first time since February. Weather can turn on a dime. That's the thing to remember when it comes to these prices. A colder U.S. winter will likely deplete some of the inventory, but don't expect prices, they say, to head back to the $5 or $6 area. More likely are bouts of shorter-term volatility. So with that, it basically means that the prices of natural gas can withstand a few cold snaps here or there. A prolonged one, however, through the end of the winter, that's another story. But oil prices have had been easing as well. Forgetting about today's rebound, because crude had its worst day of the month yesterday, down almost 4%. It's off 19% from the November peak. Still, oil prices face many of the same long-term supply and demand dynamics that pushed them up as well in the first place, too. And the Omicron economic cycle will certainly pass, as other COVID waves have, who expect energy prices in the first quarter of the coming year are going to be somewhat higher than they are now. To some degree, however, that may depend on the weather. Now, almost 2 years after the pandemic triggered dire forecasts for global trade, one of the world's largest port operators is actually looking to expand. That's despite a challenging environment that its billionaire owner calls a war against an invisible enemy. Enrique Razon, president of Manila-based International Container Terminal Services, says that there have been a lot of difficulties with the pandemic, but in spite of all those, we're still having our best year. Whatever opportunities come up in Africa, we'll seriously look at it, the Middle East and other markets. We're now definitely in expansion mode in markets that fit our strategy and profile. Now, certainly the exception. Razon's company, ranked as the eighth biggest container port operator, runs 34 terminals in 20 countries, including Australia, Mexico, and Poland. Well, looks like it's time for another break. We'll stop there. Please stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business today. We're at 1-800-375-4188. 375-4188, our American Survival newsletter, and What a Rush of Gold and Silver Block. This week and next week off. They'll both resume first week in January. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at DGScoins.com. DGScoins.com. Okay, time for a little bit of personal finance. As a precious metal investor, Bitcoin, treasury, stocks, whatever, old or young, you know you'd be wise to start saving and investing now to build yourself a nest egg. But how much money you actually need to fund a comfortable retirement down the road can often lead to a hot debate. People in the financial independence community who focus on saving enough money to leave their 9-to-5er and live off their investments well before the traditional retirement age of 67 they've done a lot of work toward providing a definitive answer. They've come up with what's called a FIRE number, F-I-R-E, which differs for everyone. It's the product of a calculation, certain assumptions that together determine how much money you need to accumulate in order to live off your investments. Now, going through the exercise of calculating that number can actually be useful to understanding your goals, even if they don't involve retiring early. Greg Sabatier, who's author of Financial Freedom and a co-founder of BankBonus.com, says, with every dollar you save, you give yourself more freedom and options. Based on how much you've saved in investment, you should ask yourself, how many months of freedom have you acquired versus how many you want? So, to find your FIRE number, you multiply your expected annual expenses in retirement by 25. So, if you expect to spend $50,000 a year in retirement, you could call it quits when your investment and savings total $1.25 million, right? $50,000 times 25 equals $1.25 million. It's a simple calculation that relies on a couple of assumptions. One's the so-called 4% rule. That's a retirement convention, we'll call it, that's gained prominence after the publication of influential research from Trinity College over 30 years ago. This rule of thumb states that an investor can safely withdraw 4% adjusted for inflation, that's an important assumption, from a balanced portfolio each year in retirement and be relatively certain that the money in the portfolio won't ever run out. Now, the reason this works, ladies and gentlemen, is because you assuming that compounding interest keeps the remainder of the portfolio growing, even as you steadily continue taking small chunks out. But this isn't a guarantee. I mean, because markets, as we know, can go up as well as down. Historically, we know the broad stock market has trended upward, with the S&P 500 averaging an annualized return of nearly 10%. gold's a little bit less over the long run, but again, an annual return in the positives. So while the original rule applies over a traditional retirement timeline of, say, 30 years, it can also work if you retire earlier, too. Now, Sabatier says the nature of compounding is that it accelerates. It's an exponential curve. Therein lies the beauty of this kind of planning. Now, as alluring as it may be to consider your finances in terms of one number, there are factors other than what you hope to spend in retirement that can change the calculus behind your decisions, particularly your savings decisions. First, the 4% rule may need a little tweaking over time. Although the model is based on historical market data, some experts believe that investors shouldn't expect returns to be as robust going forward. What's the term? Past performance does not guarantee, you know, future returns? Well, analysts at Morningstar recently calculated that a 3.3% withdrawal rate in retirement is likely a safer bet for folks to, you know, live off their nest egg without ever running out of money. But if you believe Morningstar's analysis, you'd multiply your expected expenses by 30.3, rather than 25. Next, your expected expenses in retirement may be higher than you'd think. The original 4% rule factors in inflation during your retirement, but you'll need to consider how prices may go up between now and then, particularly when you stop working. Inflation continues on the path to retirement. It just doesn't start when it happens. If you think you need $60,000 to live on and there's 2.5% inflation, 10 years from now, that's about $77,000 that you're actually going to need. Remember that. That's perhaps the most important aspect of this analysis. Third, health care's expensive. If you're looking to leave the office for good, you have to factor in the cost of health care, particularly like the vast majority of Americans whose companies don't offer it in retirement. Of course, there is Medicare right now. That's a huge help. But remember, the costs of out-of-pocket health care, which translates into premiums, will be higher than you previously assumed. Now, a lot of people look at what's being deducted by payroll and assume that's what their health insurance costs. They think their coverage costs $6,000, say $500 a month, but often forget that their employer is subsidizing sometimes $15,000 or even $20,000 in family health care costs. So to figure out your total cost, health coverage, your current coverage, look at your W-2 at the end of the year, which shows the combined employer and employee health coverage contributions. The website for Sabatier's book has a calculator which allows you to adjust all of these proverbial knobs. They include the rate of return you're hoping your investments will earn, your desired withdrawal rate, your current income, and any one-time future expenses you expect, whether, you know, it's a car, a new refrigerator, a new house, a vacation house, and so forth. If your goal is to hit your number and sail into retirement, you'll likely have to adjust regularly between now and then. This isn't one-stop shopping. Look back 5 or especially 10 years. Think about what your life looked like. Your life's going to have substantial crossroads and a lot of uncertainty going forward, which make longer-term projections a lot more difficult. You have to think not only about what you're retiring from, but what you're retiring to, what you're going to do with your money and your time. Well, that can possibly change, too, depending on, among other things, your health or your spouse's health. Whether you're retiring next month or in 30 or 40 years, experts recommend holding money you hope to spend over the next couple of years in safe, liquid assets, whether it's a savings account account, short-term bonds, or gold. Doing so could allow you to take a so-called mini-retirement where you test the waters of financial independence, say, for a year. The key to using your FIRE number is realizing that the money you save has the potential to buy you time when you don't have to work. If you're aiming to spend $50,000 a year and you have $200,000 saved, well, you have 4 years of freedom in your bank account. Then if you take a year off, you might think you have 3 years left, but the great thing about the stock or precious metal market is you can come back full time and your money will have grown to the same amount as when you left. You'll just have a lot less risk if a good chunk of your assets are in gold and silver. Remember, for all your precious metal needs, ladies and gentlemen, call us at 1-800-375-4188. Now, while we're at practical advice, the end of 1 year and the beginning of another is always a good time to focus on career or personal growth. According to the Labor Department, the U.S. Labor Department, the economy is in various stages of recovery, and some industries, in fact, have now recovered their job losses from the early days of the pandemic. Of course, a lot still haven't, but either way, here are five skills that can make you especially valuable in 2022. Number one, problem solving. In the future, it's going to pay to think critically and creatively about your work and to add unique skills and experiences and connections to especially your professional toolkit. Your efforts to exist outside the box will not only help you come up with novel solutions, but give you the tools to communicate that you are capable of solving new and exciting problems. For example, time spent analyzing a different kind of business or connecting with folks in a different industry may just help you find new ways to think about a problem or new tools for a team you're working with to use. That's what really employers and customers are looking for in this rapidly changing market. Number two, strategic planning. Futurists don't predict the future. They identify trends in society or a market or a company, and consider the impact that these trends might have. By using what-if scenarios, literally thinking about this, stepping back and thinking, what if this, what if that, really doing a simple but useful SWOT analysis. Use these scenarios to role-play different strategies and outcomes. And you can help people determine what strategic direction to take and to plot alternate strategies in case of a sudden unexpected turn. You can apply these same techniques to your own business or career. Now, learning how to consider the different directions that your industry or career path may take can help you to intentionally map your future moves, come up with a plan B, and protect yourself against all that rampant uncertainty. To practice this particular skill, they suggest learning how to create a compelling mission, gathering key business intelligence, and assess potential opportunities to chart a winning course forward. Now, third, decision making. This we often underestimate the impact of. All of us will be called on to make fast and impactful choices next year. This is true even if we don't have the same level of information or the time to plan as we did before the pandemic era. Feeling somewhat unqualified to do that? Well, join the club. Making mistakes was the biggest fear in the workplace even before the pandemic. 99% of leadership is a willingness to make decisions and to keep making them. So coach yourself on how to exercise good judgment and to trust your instincts, and chances are you'll stand out from those who are simply too nervous to be decisive. learn how to absorb and rationalize, analyze data in the face of uncertainty. Let me say that again. Learn how to absorb and rationally analyze data in the face of uncertainty. Now, next is listening. A report published by McKinsey found that companies who score in the study's top quartile for ethnic or cultural diversity on executive teams were 33% more likely to have industry-leading profitability. People who are going to achieve business success in 2022 and beyond will probably know how to draw on a wide range of talents, perspectives, and skills. That requires the ability to really, really listen to other people and their opinions. Learn how to gather insights from others and deepen connections through active listening. And last, number five, logistics. If your day-to-day schedule looks like controlled chaos, well, you're not alone. Deadlines are getting tighter, job responsibilities getting greater. The secret to success here is mastering the art of logistics. If you can manage to get to Grandma's house this year for the holidays, through crowded airports, travel restrictions, and all, you probably have what it takes to efficiently prioritize your time and other resources. My thanks to future Scott Steinberg for his thoughts and ideas here. That is the end of today's program. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be on Thursday and Friday, so I'll return next Tuesday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herb. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks always to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners. Merry Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. Bye-bye.